T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Sports Radio 610 presents Clint Sterner and the show with the biggest stories of the day. It's the Big 3 at 3, number one.
All right, Big 3 at 3, and God, as I said, man, Dusty's out here getting a pack of Newport tonight, and it has not gotten easier. Last night, they took one of the toughest L's of the season, and that was just the start of it. George Springer reports has a right wrist strain, and his availability for the series in today's game is kind of in doubt. He is day to day, and also Austin Pruitt, someone you thought could be an answer in the bullpen, he's been added to the 45-day IL and having elbow issues. Dusty said he was shut down a couple weeks ago, and now he's 45 days in a 60-game season. That's going to probably end Austin Pruitt's season. Another answer you thought for the Astros. So more injuries coming out. George Springer, obviously the headline.
Right? Yeah, man. Springer was getting out of his funk at the plate, and so you were glad to see that. And then now he goes down with the right wrist strain, and so you don't know how long he's going to be out. With a lineup like the Astros, the one that they have, you're depending on them to play at a very, very high level. Because the bullpen is so young and so unproven, and you don't know what you're going to get out of the starting rotation, so you need every bat that you can get in the book. And Springer being out, that's going to hurt him. Of course, you lose Austin Pruitt as well. I mean, the Astros right now, health wise, they just can't get right. And I don't know what they got to switch up something. I don't know if it's just a string of just being really unlucky.
Yeah, the Springer
switch something up, but. This pandemic and starting and restarting the season, it's really hitting the Astros harder than pretty much any other team in Major League Baseball.
It looked like when Springer went for that diving catch, he rolled his wrist underneath him, and then you saw Miles Straw trotting out there or coming up to the plate when he came back in. You knew something was up when Springer was due up second in the inning and he didn't hit. It's interesting you say about the pandemic. It's crazy because coming into the start of the season – we looked at the Astros and was like, man, I know I said it. There's no other team that has benefited more from the time off with the pandemic because Verlander, you thought, would have never been ready at the regular start of the season. Mm-hmm. You thought McCullers, who before the season started was throwing really, really well, would have never been at this place than he was. And you just thought they caught a lot of breaks mm-hmm. until this thing started.
Listen. You make perfect sense, and I remember listening to you guys talk about that. That, hey man, they are setting themselves up perfectly because Verlander was not going to be ready to go when the season started. McCullers is coming off of Tommy John, and now you're trying to work your way through that, and so give him a little bit more time to repair and get ready. And of course, Verlander starts off the season; he's pitching at a very high level, but he goes out with his injury.
Groin was pretty beat up in there.
Yeah, pretty damn beat up in there. I must so say so myself. And so I tell you what, man. There's a lot of guys on this roster that are beat up, and the Astros are not getting any reinforcements. I asked the question to Richard Justice. He didn't give anything back to me. He had nothing for me. And so that was disheartening to hear. And so they're just going to have to figure out a way.
He said Brad Peacock, who had just started pitching on a mound earlier this week. The Springer thing is tough because with the loss of Verlander, with the loss of Osuna, with the struggles from certain players, like the thing that you need to carry you is this lineup. And Yordan Alvarez isn't back yet. Hell, he just started taking BP yesterday. You start losing that parts of that lineup that you are depending on to carry you. This is making this thing even tougher. Miles Straw in that lineup as opposed to George Springer. I don't care how much he's been struggling, it's a big time difference.
No, it's a big difference. It's a big difference in how teams are going to approach the Astros and how he covers up guys that are behind him in the lineup, Altuve, Bregman, et cetera, et cetera. So Dusty Baker has his work cut out for him. More than any other manager in the league right now, he has his work cut out for him. And he's going to have to figure out a way to make lemonade out of these lemons that are getting dealt to him. It seems like every other day there's something going on with the Astros and injuries.
What do you think about this before we go to the next one? If they brought Los Correa up to the leadoff spot.
He knows.
If Springer's out, if they brought Correa up to the leadoff spot, he's hitting as well as anybody else. And now he's hitting as well as anybody else to start the season, and he's been in the six hole. You want Miles Straw getting more at-bats than him?
The idea of moving Correa up in the lineup. I don't know about putting him in the one hole.
Maybe two.
You move up a guy like Altuve or Bregman, but I don't know about putting Correa in the one hole. But I do think Correa is best. And the thing about it is maybe you don't want to mess with him because he's doing so well. You don't want to take him out of his comfort zone, but you want to get as many at-bats as you can out of Correa because he's tearing it up right now for the Astros.
Big 3-3, number two.
Not only the Astros played, but at least the Rockets. They were able to get a win last night as they took on the Lakers. The Lakers were without LeBron James and Anthony Davis played some, but you could tell that wasn't the intense Lakers squad. But Westbrook didn't play for the Rockets. He set out. James Harden was excellent. They win 113-97. The news coming out of that is they now hold the four spot in the West, that brings them closer to avoiding the seventh spot where they won't have to face the Clippers in the first round. But a decent win. What did you take from that yesterday, Wade?
Yeah, I didn't take too much from it just because LeBron wasn't playing and, of course, Westbrook wasn't playing for the Rockets. So it wasn't the true feel of what you're going to see. I did see AD when he was in the game. He was a dominant force down low, but that's to be expected. But what I really liked out of the Rockets was you saw PJ Tucker getting offensive rebounds and creating opportunities for his teammates so that they can score. You saw that those guys were hitting threes. If you're shooting over 33-35% from the three-point line, the Rockets can beat anybody in this league. And so that's what they did against the Lakers. And so if they continue to do that, that's going to give them their only chance to come out with a victory against the two LA teams once you get into the playoffs. But them being a four seed, it's good for the simple fact is now you're not worrying about having to face the Clippers in the first round of playoffs. You're not worried about that, and that would have been the worst possible scenario for the Rockets. Looks like that's not going to happen because they continue to win ball games. Hopefully they can keep it moving forward and get those guys ready for the run.
I think the big thing to take away from the bubble with the Rockets is I think Rockets fans should be encouraged from what they've seen, right? You against the Mavericks and the Bucks, you get good wins. Dame is just playing out of his mind right now. He had 45 again last night, 11 threes. Lillard, they're playing their hearts out. They're trying to go to the playoffs. But you have to feel encouraged with the decisions Russell's making. I told you the first two games I said this, he shot 51 times and shot 45 twos. That's a huge deal.
That's what
that
you
needs
need
to
him.
Continue from Russell Westbrook. Yeah. And Harden seems to be playing well. So you like that. PJ Tucker, you got to pick it up. You got to make some shots. Another struggle last night from the perimeter, but you should be encouraged. And now I think Mike D'Antoni can be really smart with how he's going to use the lineups because you know exactly where you are. 4, 5, or 6, man, it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
like if you play Utah, Denver, Oklahoma City, there's no home court advantage, obviously.
Isn't. Yeah, yeah.
So it doesn't matter. So I think they're in a good spot.
Yeah, I like what I'm seeing out of the Jeff Greens of the world and Danielle Houses of the world. And James Harden is James Harden. There's not a guy in the league that can guard him one-on-one.
Not one.
There's teams that are throwing a kitchen sink at him, and he's continuing to create for other guys and getting them open looks because they're rotating the ball well. That's what the Rockets are going to have to do if they want to go on a run and really compete for an NBA championship.
Yep. Rockets win. They get back on the court on Sunday. We'll see if Russ plays in that game.
Big 3-3, number 3.
This was interesting to me within the division. So yesterday, for the Tennessee Titans, Vic Beasley, a guy they picked up, a good pass rusher, at least a couple of years ago with Atlanta, but a good pass rusher out of Clemson. They picked him up in the offseason as a guy they wanted to bring in to help their pass rush. This was Mike Vrabel yesterday speaking about Vic Beasley, who had not shown up to camp yet.
Probably a lot of questions and concerns, you know, about Vic Beasley. I just want to address, you know, where we are with that. And me personally, you know, we're excited to see Vic when he gets here. Again, he's not here. Everybody else is. You know, he's under contract. We expect him to be here. But again, have reached out, have not had much conversation with him. You know, we still look forward to getting him in here and coaching him when he gets here and want him to be a part of the football team. So obviously, I'm hopeful that we can focus and I can focus on our football team and the guys that are here that are improving and the ones that we're coaching.
Has there been any further communications with the teams with Vic since John's statement a week ago?
Not for me, Teresa. That's where we're at with that.
That was Mike Vrabel yesterday. It does turn out Titans outside linebackers reported from ESPN. Vic Beasley has been absent from training camp, but he did return to the team today. And is reporting he will get fined $500,000 for missing his time. But I was
money away. Vic, you, man, don't
for
get
no
that
reason,
money
man.
Away
what are
for
you
no
doing?
Reason.
Radio.com. I was listening to the radio.com app this morning, and I heard in the loop Landry and Lopez talking about this. Talking about this could be a huge deal for the Texans if he is not there. And I agreed with them. Vic Beasley being back there. I was thinking this could open the door up for a guy we've been talking about this morning, Jadeveon Clowney. I still think the door may be open. That may be a spot for him to go there. But if Vic Beasley is acting silly like this, Clowney could be a destination for him.
Well, I feel like Clowney is going to end up there regardless. I think Clowney is just biding his time. He feels like, you know, he's going to continue to hold out until he can get his number. And if he can't get his number, he knows what he's going to get from the Titans. And so he would end up there. It wouldn't surprise me one bit if Clowney ends up in Tennessee. Vic Beasley is an important key piece to what the Titans want to do this year. Him missing that one day and cost him $500,000. Hopefully, whatever the reason for it was a legitimate one, and that, you know, sometimes life happens. You never know what's going on with them at home and what he had to work out. But just communicate with your team so it's not something that's costing
you
money.
Just don't go AWOL.
I just don't like guys giving away their money.
$50,000 per day. He missed 10 days.
I thought you said $500,000. I was like, ooh, Lord.
No, it was. It resulted. Oh, it was $50,000 a day that resulted
in. Oh, he missed that many days.
He missed 10 days.
Okay. Damn, dog.
That resulted into a $500,000 fine for Vic Beasley.
Listen, whatever was going on, you would hope that it's rectified now and he can get to work. But, hey, man, the Titans are the Titans. He's not going to be the determining factor if the Titans win the Super Bowl. Excuse me, win this division. I don't even know why I put those things together. Whether they will win this division or not, what's going to determine for them is that running game, that offensive line, and if Tannehill can actually be a productive quarterback back-to-back year.
Do you like him with Clowney? And because I'm thinking that's a spot. Cleveland was a spot, but they just broke off Miles Garrett, and they gave Olivier Vernon the year before pretty good money.
Yeah.
Seattle was another space, but now they've been doing what they're doing. Been hearing a lot, Everson Griffin, who I like a lot, and they've been talking to him and Clay Matthews. This seems like the other spot. And does that concern you with him? They've got another pass rusher, Harold Landry. Yeah, they've got so those three potentially together.
And then they got the D tackle that's from, I believe, Mississippi State. I can't think of his name.
Oh, yeah, Simmons.
Yeah, Jeffrey Simmons. Their defensive line would be formidable as is, but if you add Clowney to it, that's a problem. Now, the good thing about it for the Texans' perspective is that their offensive line, I think, matches up pretty well with that group over there. But the Titans with Clowney, they become a problem for everybody in AFC, not just for the division.
All right. Many of you thought I said some ridiculous stuff about Jadeveon Clowney earlier, but that ain't nothing. To wait till you hear this stat that ESPN put out in one of the most ridiculous rankings of a position group that they have, the Houston Texans is. It is absolutely insane. No better person here to discuss this than Wade Smith. We'll get into that coming up next. It really penetrates it a little bit harder.
Sports Radio 610 presents Clint Sterner and the Show.
Clint Sterner out today. Wade Smith, 12-year NFL vet, is with us. And your expertise was the offensive line. You played 12 years in the league on the offensive line. And I love, not like love, what the potential could be for this offensive line for the Texans this year, but ESPN does not. Wait, they did a poll, and they said the Texans would be coming into this season. That's right, with Tunzel, Sharpling, Nick Martin, Zach Fulton, and Titus Howard, that five, they said they would be rated the number 22nd best offensive line in football. You've watched every game.
Yeah.
You've watched these guys, and you watch it from a different vantage point. I think that's insane. I think this team has a chance, and I'll be shocked if they're not a top 10 offensive line this year. 22. How do you feel about that?
22 is a terrible number. It no way reflects what you actually get out of the offensive line for the Houston Texans, the actual production, their ability to protect the quarterback, to run the football on a consistent basis. Like, Carlos Hyde was a 1,000-yard rusher behind this offensive line. That's legitimate good work done by the front. And they were put together piecemeal at the last minute.
They were beat up, wasn't they?
They were put together last minute, beat up. They bring in Tunsil 8 games before the regular season starts, and now they have a whole year together. I think a lot of times when you're dealing with ESPN or national news sites when they're trying to determine what the Texans are or aren't, is them basing it off of things that they've seen from the Texans in the past. I think they feel like it's still 2017 offensive line for the Houston Texans, 2018 offensive line, when it's nowhere near that. The Texans have invested a lot of money and a lot of draft picks in the positions, and so now you're seeing it pay dividends with their production on the field. And so, to me, the Texans have a – to me, they're going to end up being anywhere between 8 and 12 as far as offensive lines in this league. And when you look at the list of what the teams that they had listed in front of the Texans –
the damn Jets.
They had the Jets offensive line. They had – who else did they have? They had
the
Broncos offensive line, the Giants offensive line.
Nate Solder is – their left tackle is opted out. The right tackle for the Broncos opted out.
Yeah, Detroit's offensive line. They got some teams that you're looking at like, come on, man. You know good and damn well that these teams aren't better than the Texans. But that just shows you kind of the bias in the narrative of what goes on down here in Houston, is that Deshaun Watson is running around all the time because his offensive line is terrible, when a lot of times he's running around because his receivers aren't open. And I don't care how good of an offensive line you have, if the receivers aren't open, and Deshaun Watson's the type of guy that's not going to just pull the ball down and run and go forward because he wants to find and make a big play, it makes the offensive line look a lot worse than it actually is in that regard. Those guys get after it. To me, the continuity they're going to have, the Tunsil penalties, I heard you and Clint talking about it yesterday, a lot of that stuff is going to be eliminated this year. I fully expect that to be one of the strongest parts of the Texans.
Why are you so sure on that? Why are you so sure on – because it's good to have you in on that. Why are you so sure on that? Because Clint was saying there's a lot of factors, talking about the quarterback, the center. To me, I'm just telling you, somebody, look, and you get to 14 and you leading the league, man.
It's a terrible number.
Some of this is –
but I'm going to have to cuss and discuss this thing with him.
Some of this has to be on you. Why are you so confident that this thing will get rectified?
I look at Tunsil's 14 penalties. I would say a third of them were on him. Like, no question about him. Like, a third of those, you know, which would be like, what's that, about five? Five of those were for sure on him. There were five of them that were on somebody else up front, normally Nick Martin, the center. And then the other five, honestly, were just BS. Like, the ref calling a penalty on him when it really wasn't a penalty. And so I remember last year when Tunsil was like, I got a target on my back, and people just took that as him being the type of person that's not taking ownership of what he did wrong and not taking ownership for his mistakes. You go back, I did a whole video series on it on my Twitter page and showed, like, listen, he's moving when the ball is moving. It's not a false start. If he's moving when the ball moves, that's legal. But if the other team they're playing against say, you got to watch that left tackle, he's getting out of there real fast, you got to watch him, and it looks borderline, they're more apt to call it.
Is that something that the Texans coaching staff should be going to? Like, if that was such a problem last year, is that something the Texans coaching staff be saying, hey, look, he goes really close with the snap of the ball and really look at those to see if that's really a false start.
Yeah, that's one of those things where after the game, you go back and send film into the league and say, hey, y'all called this on him, but that wasn't a legitimate call. You know what I mean? Y'all got to correct that. And so I just with Tunsil being in the system for the second year, where he's more comfortable with the cadence, he's more comfortable with everything that goes on. Because as an offensive lineman, you're taught to anticipate the snap count. So if you're an offensive lineman, you're listening to the cadence and you're trying to time it up that you get off the snap as soon as he says hut, as soon as he calls for the ball. That's what you're taught since you were a little kid in Little League. Anticipate the snap count. So you don't ever want to take that away from an elite pass protector like Laremy Tunsil. But what he figured out and what he found out last year is that his quickness in getting off the ball sometimes was costly. So he has to slow himself down. But you don't want to have to tell somebody to slow down to get your job done. That part they have to work out between him, the cadence, the quarterback, the center, so that they can all be on the same page and get off. I feel like with the time that they've had together a whole season, him knowing the playbook, because he didn't know the playbook last year. You heard the comments that
– it came in 8 days before the season started.
8 days before the season started. You heard the comments that that Carlos Hyde said when he went to Seattle. He said, I didn't know the playbooks. I was just – they gave the game plan and it was week to week. By now, Laremy Tunsil understands the playbook. He understands what the quarterback is looking at. He can anticipate it. So now he's more comfortable in his stance. Everything works better. So I fully believe that that number at least is going to be cut in half, but I would think it's going to be cut into two-thirds of those penalties are going to be gone. He might get four, maybe three or four false starts this year, and that would be an acceptable number. But 14 is a terrible number. That is a number unacceptable, and they got
to
get
that
worked
out. He's too good to lead the league. He's too good, too smart of a player to lead the league in false starts. It's not good. He shouldn't be someone that's fearing, like, all right, I got to get off. I got to get off if Von Miller is coming. Like, he's too good to where he doesn't feel like he's got to jump early. I've seen some tackles that got to get off and jump early. I've seen some. I've watched in Kansas City Eric Fisher get loaded up for Von Miller and Bradley Chubb and Khalil Mack and have a lot of false starts. Laremy Tunsil's not that type of player.
I tell you what, Eric Fisher is the most thankful person in the world right now that the Chiefs pulled out that Super Bowl, because it was a long day for him.
Good God, Nick Bosa was kicking his
Nick head. Bosa was giving him the blues every other play, it seemed like. Eric Fisher had a long day at the office, but he's still a Super Bowl champion.
He won that bad boy. Yep. Wade Smith in for Clint Sterner and Ron the Show Hughley with you. I said I think they could be a top 10 offensive line. I'll be shocked if they aren't. You said 8 to 12. But I want to get from you why you think specifically this group will be so much better. Because I think the point you made of, man, people just remember Deshaun running around. And a lot of the highlight plays are him running around. Deshaun's not running around last year the way he was running around in 18 when he couldn't make the flight to Jacksonville and had to be bussed. Like, he's not running around like that. So I just think people are just saying, just have that memory of, oh, yeah, that's him. I don't get that. But I'm curious, why do you think, what is it in particular that you believe this offensive line is going to be better?
But you made a great point there when you said it's not like 18 where people were getting beat off the snap into where he's going to have to scramble as soon as he catches the ball. That stuff wasn't going on last year at the beginning of the season. What happened was Titus Howard got hurt. And so now you had Chris Clark in the lineup. I think Chris Clark had to start a game for Tunsil as well, at least one game, maybe two. But you started to see it get a little bit more leaky than it was throughout the season. Those guys are all going to come back healthy. That's the first reason, first and foremost, that I feel like they're going to be a much better group, because when they were all out there together, they played at a very, very high level. You put Laremy Tunsil in the second year of the system. You got Max Sharpton in the second year of the system. And you got Titus Howard in the second year of the system. Those guys are going to improve, because this is a complicated offense. It's an offense that you need to be well-versed in and be able to understand to function at it at your best, at your individual best. So for you to get that second season in you, that's going to help them tremendously. So I just feel like based off of that alone, they're going to be a much better group.
The jump from year one to two is
– it's a big deal. And then you also look at it like this. The weapons that they have around them is going to force teams to be hesitant. It's going to force them to try to figure out, well, what the hell is the Texans doing right now? That's always to the offensive lineman's advantage. Anytime you got defensive players having to think, having to communicate and talk as opposed to just pinning your ear backs and coming after the quarterback, it makes your job that much easier. It makes it easier for you to dictate to them. So everything with offensive football goes hand in hand. And so the fact that the moves that they made as far as the multiple position players that can touch the ball and the versatility they're going to use offensively, that's going to help the offensive line. And the offensive line continuity is going to help the skill position players.
You think this makes a difference in the playoffs? This improved offensive line play can make it? Because that's what people really want to – okay, that's great. They'll be better. But how is that a difference when they get in these games that really matter?
So the problem is that – You win football games not just with offensive line. You win football game with especially those type of football games with an entire team. And the defensive side of the ball, there's so many question marks and so many concerns there. To me, they haven't taken a step forward on the defensive side of the ball that you would need in order to get over that hump. And then they lost their best player offensively as opposed to adding to that, they took away and then diversified it. So to me, you almost treaded water as far as your ability at the skill spot. And so that, to me, they're not at the position right now to take that next step.
All right, we were talking in the pre-show meeting, and Wade believes even with all the new weapons that the Texans have added, there is one player who was on the club last year that should get even more touches than he did a year ago. This is not Will Fuller. We'll explain who that is coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Clint Sterner and the Show. Sports Radio 610, Houston Texans breaking news.
All right, Wade, this is breaking news. Ian Rapoport of the NFL Network, just 1 minute ago, the Texans placed wide receiver Kenny Stills on the NFL list with an illness per the wire. Meanwhile, other players like Jack Crawford is also on the COVID list, but just coming in from Ian Rapoport, the Texans place wide receiver Kenny Stills on the NFL list with an illness per wire. It'll be good coming up here in about 25 minutes. We've got the general John McClain, who is this tight end in the NFL, and we'll see what he's hearing about that. Kenny Stills, a potentially big part of this team that really makes this wide receiving core deep. If you just joined us, from Ian Rapoport of NFL Network, Wade, the Texans place wide receiver Kenny Stills on the NFL list with an illness.
So this is not the NFL
COVID
list, or is this the
– It's not saying COVID, because he then went on to talk about another player for the Titans, a defensive tackle. They did put him on the reserve COVID list. It just says NFL list.
Illness.
With an illness.
Interesting. Well, I mean, he could just have – I don't know. I don't know what that is. That I haven't seen that.
I've not seen that
especially
designation
at this point
either.
Of the year, like, to put – to me, I don't know what to take from that. I don't know what that means. But I will say this. Kenny Stills is a guy that's been discussed at length over the past few months. Is this a guy that's trade bait? Is this a guy that is a key part to what the Texans are going to do going forward in 2020? We've seen what he can do when he's on the field. He did miss a few games last year. We talk about health at the receiving position. And so you don't want to see stuff like this with the receiving core at all. You don't want to see guys missing any time if they can control it. I'm sure people will probably point fingers to things that Kenny Stills has done away from the field to try to possibly, you know, place blame to why,
right,
to place blame to why he might be on this list or might not. I don't know, because this list is weird. They didn't put him on the COVID list.
Because it's strange. Yeah, you're right.
They
because
just put
Matt,
him on illness list.
Matt Stafford, they set the COVID list. Gardner Minshew, they set the COVID list, quarterback with the Jags. And in the same tweet, he talked about Jack Crawford, a defensive tackle. I don't know who Jack is, and I'm sorry about his family. I don't know who your son is. For the Titans, defensive
it's cool.
tackle.
Somebody
Jack.
Knows Jack.
Somebody does.
Somebody man. Knows
you
Jack.
Didn't make
Maybe
some
the show don't know Jack. Listen, somebody knows
That's
Jack.
Right, baby. You made this NFL money, man. I'm happy for you. But they said of Jack Crawford that he is on the reserve COVID list. They said he says COVID list, and they've come out and said that. As we said, man, we've got John McClain coming up in the 4 o'clock hour, and we'll see what he's hearing about this. An interesting take there. Kenny Stills will keep you up if you just missed that. Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network. Kenny Stills has been, he's been placed on the NFL list with an illness. And that is all we have as reported at this point. All right, man, we spoke earlier in our meeting, and you thought that even with David Johnson being added in the running game, and David Johnson, boy, they have been talking him up this week, from Tim Kelly, the offensive coordinator, to Bill O'Brien, the head coach, to Deshaun Watson when he spoke Saturday. They've been talking him up. But you believe Duke Johnson, his usage rate should even, in terms of touches, be more than it was last year, even with them adding David Johnson, not alone Randall Cobb and Brandon Cooks.
Yeah, no question about it. To me, Duke Johnson was underutilized last year, and I think it cost the Texans in the long run in that game against the Chiefs. I just felt like Duke Johnson is a guy that when he touches the ball, there's always something positive coming from him. He's very, very productive. He can run the ball in between the tackles. To me, Duke Johnson is a guy that should touch the ball 15 times a game.
Whoa!
And that's 15 times a game.
In this offense,
he should touch the ball. Whether that's, you know, is that, how does that look? 11 carries and four catches? Is it 10 carries and five catches? I think that's a beautiful way to move forward with this offense. And then just from the running back position in general, I think they should touch the ball about 30, 35 times a game between the two of them. That's David Johnson and Duke Johnson. They should be carrying the ball and catching passes 30, 35 times a game. To me, that is, if you're doing that,
15?
The Texans are dictating and controlling teams they're playing against, and they're playing winning football. If you can get those guys 35 touches in the game, between those two, you're winning football games. You're moving the chains. You're keeping the other team off the field. That's what you need to beat a team like Kansas City, is you need your running backs touching the ball 35 times in a game. I haven't done the stat, but I know how games work. I just remember how they used to be. If our running backs are touching the ball that much in the game, you're winning those games. You're dictating, you're controlling the clock, you're keeping a good offense off the field. And so, to me, that's what the Texans need to start off. I mean, you get your shiny new toy in David Johnson. He's a shiny new toy. I get it. And so he's going to get his
touches. How many touches you think he should have? Because
he should have 20. Between the two, man. If he has 20 touches a game and Duke has 15, the Texans are playing winning football, because that means that David Johnson is getting somewhere between 16 carries and four catches a game. Like that's how it should be distributed. The running back should catch the ball about, you know, 5 to 8 times a game. That now you're really getting maximum value out of your running backs coming out the backfield. And it's opening up your entire offense for your receivers and your tight ends. To me, if you're doing it that way, the Texans are playing winning football.
713-572-4610. I want to hear from you on that one. Wade thinks that Duke Johnson should be getting 15 touches per game this year, and David Johnson 20, 35 touches from your backs. All right, I obviously you played in this league and you study and watch the game, so I am not going to just kill this immediately. I want to really think this through, because I'm going to just tell you initially what I'm thinking is, hey, I want the ball in Deshaun's hands.
Yeah.
I want the ball in my best player's hands. I want him to be the decision maker. And if I'm giving them the ball, let's say 16, 25 plus times rushing, handing the ball to them, that's me taking it away from him 25, 26 times. Now, with him throwing it to him, that's him making the decision, and I don't mind that.
Yeah.
And I really want to use those guys in the passing game, because I think those guys have elite pass-catching ability from the running back position, Duke and David. But, man, 35 touches from the backs when my best player is Deshaun, and I feel like the way that this team could really get on top of people is Will Fuller down the field, big plays. Brandon Cooks down the field, big plays. Kenny Stills, if he's going to be able to play, big plays. At Cobb, big plays. That's initially where I think, where it makes me feel 35 touches from the running back position feel strong, because to me it's like you're taking 25, 26 chances of Deshaun Watson having the ball.
So this is my thing. If you look at the way an offense is usually set up and the amount of plays you get into a ball game, if you run 70 plays in a game, I don't want Deshaun Watson throwing the ball more than 38, 40 times, right? So now you have if you're throwing the ball 38 or 40 out of the 70 times, that means you have 30 to 32 opportunities to run the ball between three guys. And those three guys would be Duke Johnson, David Johnson, and Deshaun Watson. And so if Deshaun Watson is running the ball 5 to 7 times a game,
and your 35 rushes, is that a part of him too?
But it's not 35 okay. rushes, it's 35 touches, yeah. which is a little different. I'm not saying that Duke Johnson should carry the ball 15 times a game.
But 11.
I said he should touch the ball 15 times a game. That means you're throwing the ball to him and he's carrying it. He needs double-digit carries. David Johnson and Duke Johnson need double-digit carries each game. Deshaun Watson needs to carry the ball 5 times a game. To me, if you're doing that.
I don't mind that.
If you're doing that, you're playing winning football. You're putting yourself in a position to where every option is open every play. And to me, that's what Bill O'Brien is saying that he wants it to be based off of the amount of receivers he has on this team and the amount of depth you have at that spot, the amount of tight ends you have. You have so many different guys that you feel like, well, I'd be comfortable with you throwing him the ball or him catching the ball, him being the target. I'd be comfortable with this guy carrying the ball. There's so many options. So make it count. Make it real for me. Make it real that Deshaun Watson is carrying the ball 5 times a game and that Duke Johnson is carrying the ball 10, 12 times a game and David Johnson is carrying the ball, 15 times a game. If you're doing that, the Texans are playing winning football.
713-572-4610. Where are you at on that? Wade believes the backs between Duke and David Johnson in each game should have 35 touches. I hear what you're saying. Because
you don't want Deshaun Watson throwing the ball more than 40 times a game. If he's throwing the ball that much, that means that you're either behind, your defense is having to be on the field too much. There's too much going wrong if he's having to throw the ball over 40 times in a game.
Unless you're just saying, like, I want to get the ball to my best playmakers, and I'll even make throws that. Or extensions of the running game, like if those are screens to Cooks and Fuller. Like, that's my thing is, when I go into it from my standpoint offensively, and I guess I will come clean, this is me watching the Chiefs for the last several years, is
yeah.
I want to find a way to get the ball to my playmakers as much as possible. And yeah. I think Duke and David are playmakers, and I think they should get touches. But when I think, like, who are the guys – that I want to get the ball in their hands and put a lot of fear in the defense, and it's the speed of Cooks and Fuller is in my mind. And I'm like, that's like, I want to see how many times I can push that avenue. And 35 just feels strong to me because it's taking it away from getting those two. Now, I could be off on that, and I'm not going to say I know everything, but – I just want Deshaun to have the ball.
Yes.
You
can't go wrong with that thought process.
Yes.
I want Deshaun to have the ball.
I want him to have the ball.
He's the best player on your team.
Yes.
That's the guy I want with the ball in my hand.
And I just – I know you have to run the football at times. But, man, I just feel like this offense could be such a big play offense if they choose to run it that way. And I just – that's my only hang-up is taking the ball out of their hands more. Your playmakers, your top playmakers' hands.
But see, I look at it like this. I look at it like matchups. And I think listening to Tim Kelly and listening to the way Bill O'Brien talks about it, he's trying to figure out matchups, right? And the matchup of Duke Johnson on a linebacker is in the favor of Duke Johnson. The matchup of David Johnson on a linebacker is in favor of David Johnson. So you have matchup advantages right there. What they're trying to do is force defenses to decide, are we going to play – this two running back look where you have David and Duke in the lineup at the same time. Are we going to play this as a nickel front or dime front? Are we going to have 5 DBs or 6 DBs to cover this because we figured they're going to throw the ball out of this front? Or are we going to say we're going to play out of base or just nickel where we say we have our extra linebacker in the game to make sure that we can stop the run? Well, if they're deciding, hey, you know what we're going to do? We're going to cover because we feel like they want to throw the ball around the yard. Duke Johnson better get his carries in that role. He's got to get his carries. David Johnson's got to get his carries. You got to force them to say, We got to put a linebacker in the game. And then now you have your mismatch where you can throw the ball all over the yard. To me, this has to be based off of the moves that Bill O'Brien made. This has to be his philosophy. You understand that Bill O'Brien loves to run the football. He's loved to run his football he's been here. And so the running backs getting 35 touches a game, I think, is not crazy for him in his mind. Now, the part that I need him to get on this page, we got to get on with him, is let Duke get more of those carries than maybe Carlos Hyde got last year. You know what I mean? Because I feel like that from what I've seen out of Duke Johnson, he's so productive and he's a tendency breaker. It'll cause defenses problems to handle him when he touches the ball.
713-572-4610. Where are you at? 35 touches a game from the running backs. Where are you at in that thought process? We'll go and grab some lines. Malik, what's your thought process on this, man?
What's going on, show? How you doing, guys?
I'm good, baby.
What up, man?
Right on, man. Yeah, man, I definitely want to get on this one. I've been thinking about it throughout the day because I think we're overthinking about the fact that now I'm so happy finally. And I'm not happy about the trade at all, but it's Deshaun's team. Deshaun is the ultimate playmaker. And I feel like his skill set, the way he plays, there's some similarities. I'm using the word similarities between Tom Brady and how I think Deshaun could play the game. What I mean is to going for the deep bomb, doing all that boxing, he's an example, going for the haymaker, going for the power punch constantly, whether that happened, almost had him in had him riding the bus to Jacksonville. So being that we have so much talent now it's a pick your poison, true pick your poison offense, and you always got to account for what Deshaun's going to have to, what he's going to do. Unlike Tom, who couldn't move in the pocket, who couldn't move outside of the pocket, Deshaun has that ability as well. So being able to, if you can slow the game down, if they can use the running backs, some of the way the Patriot offense uses it, I don't really want the exact same offense. But with Deshaun, with D4, that is a true pick your poison. And his IQ and his ability, the way he's progressing in his ability, you cannot deny that this kid is only getting better and better at the IQ aspect of the game. And I think by the offense now open up to where he can throw intermediate, short, deep, you pick your point. And then if you just play off, now he can gash you for 30. So, you know, if you're getting the ball in the running back's hands and you're picking your options that way, I would rather Deshaun do that. That's what we've been asking for years, is get it off in the flat, live the fight another down, and then hit Randall Cobb, and then hit Will Fuller deep. But let's play the clock out a little bit longer. We don't have to rush it. I really feel like we could be a winning squad, and I'm tired of people under writing off the Texans, especially D4. I think we were looking at a team that has a potential, ultimate potential, written all over it.
All right, yeah, I appreciate your call, Malik, man. I hear you. I think listening to you, and I've been thinking about this on the fly because it's an interesting thought. Should the running backs have 35 touches? I think that's where I am. I got an issue with both Duke and David getting double digit carries. That's the hangup. Because if that's 20, them both getting double digit carries, that's taking the ball completely out of, unless there's some of his zone reads where Deshaun is making the call and the decision, some of that, but that's taking the ball out of his hands and taking the ball out of a chance for big plays. Because that's what I look at this offense, is big potential for big plays. And I think it's them both running the ball double-digit times. It took me 20 minutes to get there, but that's it.
So this is the thing. From watching the Texans over the years, especially with Bill O'Brien as the play caller over there, they get a lot of big plays when they are underneath center and they got a single back there and they run a play action pass, right? If you're running the ball out of that set, it sets up those big plays even better. Brandon Cobbs came from an offense where they exclusively did that type of play action pass where the quarterback's under center, yep, you got a running back behind you, single back, you're faking a handoff to him, turning your back to the line of scrimmage, you look up, and he's running deep crossing routes. He's wide open. He's making big plays. I see that for the Houston Texans. I see that from Will Fuller, Brandon Cooks. But the way you set that up is by running the football with those guys in the game. You could put Duke Johnson as the single back and David Johnson out as receiver. You know what I mean? And then have two other receivers in the game or three other receivers in the game. That's the mismatches and problems that you can cause and force for defenses. But to make them be honest, you got to hand that damn ball off.
No,
you got to make them believe. And once they believe, Once you make them believe, that's when you got them. And so you got to run it to do that.
That Rams analogy, though, that's Todd Gurley, who was the number one option on the offense when they were doing that, for, especially in 18 when it was.
They did it with Charlie Anderson, too, now. And think about
CJ Damn Anderson. Let me see. How the hell did he pull that off?
I mean, he did it.
That is their offense. Yeah. But with Todd Gurley, it's like you felt like I got to give him the ball. He's a guy coming into the game. He was the number one person you want to get involved. It's hard for me with David and Duke Johnson from a running perspective to say that. To say I want to get them both double digit carries in a game. That's tough for me. All right, it's time to get your football fix. Clint isn't here. But we still going to get it done. Clint's football at 4, and the General John McClain is going to join us to see if we hear anything more with the Kenny Stills news that he has been put on the NFL's illness list. All that coming up next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.